Let me invite you to turn to the book of James. The book of James, near the back of your Bible. If you're not sure where it is, go to Revelation. It's the one at the back. Go the other direction, about four books, five, and you'll get there. James chapter 1, we'll be there in just a moment, reading from there. Beginning yesterday, surfacing on the internet was a brief letter that Rick and Kay Warren wrote to the staff of Saddleback Church, informing their staff, people, some of those people with whom they have worked for 33 years, that their son Matthew, 27 years old, had taken his life. Matthew suffered with mental illness since he was a child. At the end of an evening, what I presume was probably Friday evening, that he had spent with his parents, in a moment of what must have been a wave of despair that washed over his life, he chose to end his life. You want to talk about a trial? You want to talk about a testing of your faith? I will tell you, I've lived alongside extended family members who have dealt with depression and a resulting suicide. I've pastored those who have been left to pick up the pieces and press forward in the Lord despite incredible heartache, despite immense pain, because someone facing something they thought was just too unbearable chose to end their life. Trials are a part of life's journey. If you've lived any length of time, you know that. They are a part of life's journey. They came with the fallen world in which we live. But what do we do with those? How do we handle those? Well, James is an incredible author and writes one of the books of the New Testament that really is just a delight to read. James was the pastor at the church in Jerusalem. It must have been a Baptist church because they had a business meeting. You find that in Acts 15. And he was the moderator of the business meeting. And even in the letter that came, which we presume following that business meeting that we presume he wrote, and then what fits here, he probably was a great delight to hear him preach as well. Was one of those upstanding leaders of the church and was a humble man. Here's how I know he's humble. James 1, verse 1. Listen to it. James, a bondservant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes who are dispersed abroad, greetings. If you're looking at that going, well, what do you mean he's humble? How do we get that out of there? Well, let me tell you this. If I'm James, I'm writing this and saying, James, you know, the brother of Jesus. Because I'd want you to know. Maybe that gives me a little extra clout. Nope, not James. He's too humble for that. He chooses to identify himself as a bondservant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ. You want to talk about beginning to paint a high Christology quickly and a high view of Jesus. He does it right here in these opening words. So he gives us this wonderful, incredible information and tells us something briefly. And to those to whom he is writing it to those who are followers of Jesus Christ who are dispersed. They are not in Jerusalem. They have gone elsewhere, but maybe they have Some of them have returned. They've been there. Perhaps he already has connections with them, and he writes this letter as a letter of encouragement. He continues at verse 2. Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. But if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all generously and without reproach, and it will be given to him. But he must ask in faith, without any doubting. For the one who doubts is like the surf of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. For that man ought not to expect that he will receive anything from the Lord, being a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. God uses trials to shape our character to reflect his character. God uses trials to shape our character to reflect his character. And the way we live through the trials reveals whether we have his character or not. Face trials with joy. Face trials with joy because God uses them in your life. Now, we're to consider it all joy when you encounter various trials. James recommends joy at the outset. He recommends joy is the way to greet trouble. Now you have to, while James is beautiful to read and the way he describes things is wonderful, he can rock your world. Because, just to be real honest, this is not how we think about greeting troubles. To do so with joy, that for there to be a joy in our lives. Now, it would be a little easier to accept what he is saying if he is saying, you will find joy at the end of trouble. That you're going to discover joy on the backside of the trouble. And that's true. You're going to find it there as well. But he says to us that we are to welcome trouble with joy. But it's joy in the Lord. That we will find a joy in the Lord. Because God is going to use trials to produce endurance in our lives. God uses trials, difficulties, challenges, consequences to our own actions, those kinds of things to bring about endurance, which is patience and steadfastness, character, and he uses those things in our lives. There are a couple of kinds of trials, internal and external. Internal, what happens inside of us in those trials, but external, what may be caused by circumstances around us. A couple of different types of trials. There's another description for trials as well from Richard Foster, the spiritual formation author, who says, we get some trials because of exposed humanity that is due to the fall and the resulting sinful world. And because of that, we experience some trials. But we also should experience some trials connected to our pursuit of holiness. And when I read that, I had to stop and think, how often do I encounter a trial because of my deep desire to be holy? And out of a pursuit of holiness, I have encountered a trial. Wow. It's an incredible way to think about these trials, to give it a good light. We think of these trials as deep trouble. And certainly with the opening story this morning, I paint a trial of deep trouble that's been a 27-year journey that is not yet done for the Warren family. But they're not all that deep and all that difficult. There are a variety of different trials and challenges. Moms, you will experience one of those tomorrow morning. I'm going to warn you now. You will experience one of those tomorrow morning to arouse your children for the return to the classroom. They may think it is a mournful trial that's been exposed upon them, but to lovingly and kindly get them out of bed and on their way, you may experience a trial of some regard. Various different things that can run the gamut. Some that are really inconveniences in life, and some deep wounds in life. And all of them are at work in our lives. All of them are there to as a testing. All of them, whether they're deep and they're lasting, and they seem insurmountable, or whether they're really inconveniences of life that are there, and you've got to learn to deal with them in a good way, in a good manner. We're doing those things and moving through. All of those are a testing of our faith that can produce endurance. As one man said, faith is not faith which dissolves in the presence of hardship. Will your faith continue in the face of hardship? Will your faith continue when it becomes difficult, when it becomes a challenge, when it's not easy? Will your faith persist in those moments, in those days, those weeks, what may feel like a year sometimes? Will your faith persist, or will it dissolve? Through facing trials, we discover whether we are fair-weather disciples or enduring disciples who really follow Jesus no matter what's going on. We find a great example in the Scriptures in Peter. Up front, it appears that Peter failed. He denied Jesus not once. He did it three times. And he ran off. After he cut somebody's ear off, he did that too. And then he denies Jesus three times, and then we don't find him around. But we discover that his faith is restored and that he is used mightily, and he's in the upper room following the ascension of Jesus, and he's there in prayer, and we find him at the day of Pentecost as the preacher. I'm not sure he would have gotten to that place if it were not for the trial. That will produce endurance, steadfastness, patience, the ability to stay with Jesus in the face of trials and difficulties and those challenging circumstances of life. That in the midst of those, whatever yours may be, I look around the room this morning and I know there are a number of you facing different ones. But those are there to bring about endurance in your life. Endurance that is a steadfastness. Endurance that is a patience. An endurance that is an ability to stay the course with Jesus even though it's difficult. Even though it's hard. It's an active steadfastness, not a passive submission to the circumstance of life. You're not just going to lay up. Oh, this is it. I give up. I'll just lay down right here. No, I'm going to embrace this difficult circumstance. I'm going to move through it because Christ is forming me to be like Him. And as He forms me to be like Him, it will be revealed in my life, because all of this works to make you a complete person, morally complete, a blameless person. Blameless in the way you live and conduct your life. Romans 5:3 tells us that we can rejoice. Here it is again, that we can rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character. If we face our trials with joy, it is evidence we have and are developing the character of Christ. For our trials mature us as disciples. God uses those to shape our character, to be like and to be able to reflect the character of Christ. God uses these tests to produce the perfect effect in us, if we will let Him do so. He will work to produce that perfect effect in you if you will let Him do so. Trials have these opportunity to produce endurance. Those trials that, as you keep going through them, they bring about endurance. I did something different this morning. I sat by my bride. As I sat there by her a while ago, I love the fact that we have clear windows that you can see out. It's kind of nice. We have nothing to hide in here. People want to look in. That's okay, too. But as I turned and glanced out the window, there were two people across the street running, assuming for exercise. It didn't appear they were running from something. But that they were running for exercise. And the more you do that, the more endurance that you can have. My other thought was, is what causes them to want to go run on Sunday morning instead of go to church? But they run to build endurance. It seems to be a pretty hot thing nowadays. You look around Facebook and all these people, want to run a half marathon. I don't know why, just to be honest. But they want to do so, and so many of them are doing so. And they build up their bodies to be able to run that far. And then they get crazier than that, and they want to run a full marathon. That's double. The half marathon, that's 26.2 miles. I don't know. The 0.2 would have been sufficient, I would think. But you have to have endurance. Following Jesus is not a sprint. Now, back in junior high when I had to run track, notice the words I said, had to run track. That was not my choice. The coach didn't give us a choice. I played football, basketball. It was just assumed you're going to run track. We didn't have enough people not to do that, he said, so you get to run. Well, it would have been great if I could have run the 100-meter dash and the 200-meter dash. There's one problem. My dad always said, son, we can time you with a calendar. You run too long in the same spot, he always told me. Well, I tried to overcome that, and I never could overcome that. So guess what I got to run? I got to run the longer races. That's where they put the slow guys, because I needed to run something. So here, you can run the half mile and the mile. You run those. Well, guess what? To be able to run those even moderately fast so that you just don't end up last in the race, you got to run a lot of that stuff to have the endurance to do that with any kind of speed. It's not real fun. Following Jesus is not a sprint. It is a long distance run. You need endurance. And the way to endurance is not a tiptoe through the tulips on a beautiful sunny day. It comes through trials. Difficulties, challenges, they may be very difficult, they may not be that hard, but it is a trial of some form. Because we need that endurance to persevere over that long walk with Jesus so that in the long run, at the end, when we might could be our ugliest and most despicable, we really begin to shine. We really begin to reflect holiness. That there becomes a saintliness about us. Lana was a woman whose mother was aging and not gracefully. She was becoming a grouchy old woman. And Lana told me, my goal is to not become a grouchy old woman. I told her it was a noble goal. Lana's now 67. I don't know how she's doing. I'm guessing she's doing well. The farther you go, do you look more like Jesus? Do you sound more like Him? Do you act more like Him? Does the character of Jesus come oozing out of your life? For God desires to make us mature and complete as disciples. We have been summoned to Christian perfection. Now, listen. When you hear that, we've been summoned to Christian perfection, don't go, "Oh, I can't do that. I haven't been perfect today in my life. I'm not going to get there." Because we could all do that. All right? So don't do that. It's a summons to be perfect, to reach your full development. Now, doesn't that sound better? You want to get to your full development. You want to be able to be all that you can be. You know, everything Jesus intends for you, so that you are complete, that there is no unfinished part in your life. There's nothing in you that hasn't been touched by the redeeming grace of Jesus to move you away from an ungodly character, to move you away from a sinful lifestyle into the godliness and holiness and purity of Jesus. T.W. Hunt, some of you will know that name, was a man of great character and quality and wrote a number of books that many Christians have read that have helped them develop in wonderful ways. A few weeks ago when I was at Empower, I was visiting with Claude King, who was one of our speakers there, who worked with T.W. Hunt. And he was telling me that at one point, when they were all working together, they were at some kind of a retreat setting. And T.W. Was sharing with those other men with whom he worked about a sin that God had convicted him of, and he was asking them to pray for him. And Claude didn't tell me what the sin was, nor should he have. But he said, when T.W. told us what it was, he said, "I'll be honest, none of the rest of us would have even thought of it." He said, "You see, in T.W.'s life, he had taken care of all of the big stuff. He had learned to lay all of those things, but as he continued to walk with Jesus, Jesus just kept refining, and kept touching every area." Now, let me say this to all of you. That ought to ring as a sweetness in your ears and a pleasant taste on your tongue. Not as, "I don't want to have to go through all that." Because as you go through all of that, what's going to be there? That ought to be the heartbeat of who we are as followers of Jesus. That we want everything about us to be like Jesus. And we have been summoned to that life. God's purpose is for us to be perfect and complete, that this Christian perfection, to reach our full development, that there's no unfinished part, so that we lack nothing. We are lacking in nothing. God wants to put every component, every part, every quality into your life and wants to remove everything that doesn't need to be there. And a lot of times we go through trials and difficulties to do that. God wants to invite us into that. You know, a lot of times we get concerned about the external. What do we look out like on the outside? We have a world that encourages that, and makeup and fashion and exercise and diet. And we run these folks out here that, you know, everybody says, you know, "Hey, these are the pretty people." And all of us that don't measure up to what the pretty people look like, we think, "Well, maybe I'm not so pretty." But a lot of those folks may be pretty people on the outside, but you wouldn't want to hang around them with their character at all. I watched a movie a number of years ago, and a young man had moved to the big town from the country, and he was getting picked on and given a hard time because he was an old country boy, and they were making fun of him. And one of the big things in town was cars, but he had gotten a job at the gas station, and he was talking to the owner of the gas station, who kind of took him under his wing, and He wanted a nice vehicle to drive. He wanted it to look good on the outside. But one of the things all the guys in town did was race these cars. Boys, you better not listen to this part of it. Your parents will all be on your case, including this one. So finally what he did, though, was the guy he worked for had this car that could really run for sale. And I still remember the guy said, "Well, I thought you wanted this nice looking car." And the guy said to him, "Well, it's not what's on the outside that counts, it's what's on the inside." Well, let me tell you this, if that's true of a car, how true is it of us? Now, it doesn't hurt to take care of the outside, do the best you can with what you got. But you can completely turn over the inside to Jesus. And allow Him to work His completeness in your life. To remove everything that doesn't need to be there. And to work it in. And the catch is He works through trials. And we don't like that. Just to be honest, we don't like that. Can't there be some other way? No, because it's through that trial, through that resistance, that we get there. It's through that we arrive. Because He does that. And those trials that come into life, and sometimes they are unexplainable. We don't know why they would happen or why they have to happen. And we cannot always know it at the moment. And sometimes we may not ever fully know it. And especially if we don't let Him use it. Now, I know I'm not the only basketball lover, especially college basketball lover in this room. And many of us know, and even if you're not, you perhaps have heard of Kevin Ware this week, the Louisville basketball player who broke his leg on the basketball court last Sunday very badly and required surgery that evening to repair an extremely serious break. Only to discover a couple of days later that he said, "Even though I don't know how at this point, I know this fits into God's plan for my life." I don't know much about Kevin Ware other than he's a really good basketball player and that evidently he has some kind of a relationship with the Lord. I don't know why trials all have to come, but I know they come. You have dealt with them. I have. I could recount one after another for you today just so that you would know. The longer you know me, the more you will know them. The longer I know you, the more I will know them. It's a part of our shared journey and stories together. We get to know those kinds of things, but we all need to understand that God, as those happen in our life, God uses them to shape us to reflect the character of Christ, to build into us a completeness, a finished product. And as those trials mature our faith, and we begin to reflect more and more of the character of Christ, James lets us know there's a key ingredient involved. In order for that to happen, in order to get us there, and it's this, that as we're dealing with each trial, as we're living through life, we can ask God for wisdom. We can ask God for wisdom. As you go through trial, we will not necessarily know why the trials are there. Sometimes you can know when a trial comes because it's a consequence of your choice and your behavior. You know why it's there. And a lot of times when kids are little, and they get in trouble and then they get a spanking, and they can tie the two together. When we get grown, sometimes we don't always tie the two together very well. And sometimes they just come in life. Sometimes we're not sure how they get connected and all of that kind of stuff, and we don't know if they're a consequence or not, but they come in life. And so he says, ask God for wisdom. And I think part of the reason we ask God for wisdom is in asking God for wisdom, we'll be able to see whether it's a result, it's a consequence of our actions and our choices, and we need to know those things. But he says, pray for wisdom. Now, what is wisdom? Well, there are a lot of people who see wisdom as just a cleverness. You know, you got some kind of a pithy saying that you can throw out at people and some cunning ideas and sharp words that may elicit laughter from other people if you say them. What we don't understand many times is that in the Scriptures, wisdom is practical usefulness. Practical usefulness. And when James gets to talking about wisdom, you can hear, if you've ever read Proverbs, you can hear Proverbs begin to reverberate in the back of your brain. I mean, there are some connections there. But that practical usefulness to discern right from wrong and good from evil, a wisdom that leads to the greatest possible good for the biggest number of people in the circumstance in which you exist, and the ability to understand what the will of God is. Christian wisdom begins with an acknowledgement of God and a willingness to understand His will for you. J.B. Phillips, in his translation, said it this way: if anyone does not know how to meet a particular problem, any problem, might be a work problem, might be a home problem, might be a finance problem, all of those kinds of things. It's not likely the problem is the light turned red on you when you wanted it to stay green, although you may consider that a problem. I do sometimes. That's not what he's talking about. But anything you face, if you don't know how to meet that, you can ask God for wisdom. And here's the good news. God bestows wisdom on those who ask for it, who long for it, who ask. Listen to this. Jesus told us the parable of the insistent widow who just kept after and kept after and kept after and kept after. And she got what she wanted because she kept after it. And he tells us the other parable, of the friend who has a out-of-town friend who arrives and it's late and he has nothing to feed his friend. So he goes to his neighbor friend and begins to knock at his door, and the neighbor says, "Go away, we're in bed," which is a big deal. You know, it's more than just turning the deadbolt and shutting the door and the lights are all out. It's a bigger deal there. And "Go away, we're already in bed." "No, no, no." And he keeps knocking because he knows his neighbor friend still has bread left, and his friend who just arrived from out of town needs something to eat. And he keeps on, and because he kept on, the neighbor friend helped him. Jesus says, "Pray and do not lose heart. Keep asking. Keep asking." And we are to ask with faith and no doubt. Don't doubt. Ask with faith. And you may have to ask, how do I do that? Because we tend to not always have faith, don't we? Ask and God will grant you wisdom. God gives generously. Luke 6:38 says, "Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over." I mean, got to get it all in there. You're pouring your oatmeal to make your oatmeal. You need a cup of oatmeal. If you're like me, you stick your hand down in there and press it down because you want to make sure you get enough. I was in high school. We had kids in our FFA chapter that showed sheep. I don't know why. I'll tell you two things about sheep. They're stupid and they stink. And the Scriptures call us sheep. That's free. Anyway, but we would shear sheep, and they'd have this big bag to put the wool in, and it hung from this big metal thing that actually had a ladder on it, because if you just kind of start dumping the wool in there, the bag's going to be full until you get in it and you begin to press it down. And then you press it down, you fill it up, and you press it down, and you keep repeating the process. Unlike a long time ago when you picked cotton by hand, and my high school history teacher who grew up on a cotton farm says sometimes occasionally he'd try to sneak a stalk or two into his bag because cotton is light and fluffy and didn't weigh much, and you got paid by the pound if you had an extra stalk or two in there. It increased your weight. Besides that, after he got his backside whipped with one of those stalks a couple of times, he was done with that. But sometimes that's the way we act, and sometimes that's the way we respond. You're going to ask God for wisdom. It says God's going to grant it, and God is generous. It's going to give you enough, but you got to go asking. But you have an open invitation to ask. You have an open invitation to ask, and it's going to be given, and He will give to you. But there's this warning. Don't doubt. Whatever you ask for, Matthew 21, verse 22 says, whatever you ask for in prayer, you receive if you have faith. If you have faith. Doubt leaves you unprepared to receive from the Lord. He says to us not to ask with any doubt, which underlines we are to ask in faith, to believe. Jesus looked for faith in everyone who came to Him, and He was disappointed with those who showed doubt. Mark chapter 6, verses 5 and 6, it says, Jesus of His own city of Nazareth, He could do no great works there because they would not believe. Mark 9, 22 and 23, there is a dad who asked of Jesus, if you can, for Him to heal his son. Jesus says, if you can, everything is possible. Anything is possible for those who believe. Matthew 8, 8, the centurion wanted Jesus to heal his servant. And he says to Jesus, just say so. You don't have to go to my house. If you'll just say so, he'll be healed. Jesus said, look, I haven't found this kind of faith anywhere. Ask, Jesus says. The scriptures say, James says, if you're going through a trial, you've got all this stuff and you need some wisdom. What do I do? How do I work my way through this? How do I press on? Ask Jesus for wisdom and don't doubt. Don't doubt for doubt. Doubt is like an unstable person. One guy compared it to a piece of cork tossed out upon the ocean and carried about wherever the waves want to send it. Because it has no ability to resist, no ability to guide itself, no ability to stop, no ability to start. Nope, it's just got to go wherever the waves push it. But rather, Psalm 112, verse 7 says that a man needs a heart that is fixed and trust in the Lord. That's what we need. God uses our trials to shape our character that we may reveal His character. Does your faith work even in a trial? In a difficulty, in a problem, in a tight spot? Does your faith work? Do you live with joy even in difficult circumstances? You see, happiness is determined by your circumstances. Joy is determined by your relationship with the Lord. And even if your circumstances are difficult, your joy can be sure. Do you pray for wisdom? Do you pray for wisdom? An open invitation, and I look at this and I have to think of the number of times I haven't prayed for wisdom. I wonder how many times I've made Jesus sad. Going, well, I can give you what you need, but you're going to come ask me. God will use your trial, your difficulty, your circumstances to bring you to be the person that reflects His character. Greg Laurie is a pastor who in 2008 lost his adult son to suicide. And he said in moments like these, in trials and difficulties and circumstances, These words from Him can be applied to your life and your situation no matter what you're facing. Hear them. At times like these, there really are no words, but there is the Word. And the Word says you can ask Jesus for wisdom. And there is no manual, but there is Emmanuel, who promises to be with you. Now, I know today there are trials being faced by those in this room. God uses trials to shape your character to be like His character. And as you go through the trial you are in, you're going to reveal the character you already have. And He will shape you to be even more like His character if you will let Him. And He can remove all that junk and add all of His richness and beauty in all of His wonderful plan for your life, in your life. He can do all of that in you if you will let Him. It's your choice.